the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Are you a happily married husband, or would you like one? Dr. Scott Haltzman has written a book entitled The Secrets of Happily Married Men, and it is being reviewed all over the country. It has sparked a lot of discussion, and that's what we're going to talk about here. It is right in some places, wrong in other places, and hilarious in many places. It raises many of the most common issues of conflict between husbands and wives. It is a secular book, and we're going to start looking at its argument today. Get ready to call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK, and we'll get to that discussion in just a moment. First, a review of some issues in the news. Canadian voters spoke very clearly yesterday, electing Stephen Harper and his Conservative Party. It will not have a majority party in the Canadian Parliament. They're not going to have a clear majority, so what you're going to see is a coalition government. But this is very significant because after 13 years of uninterrupted rule by the Labour Party, the longest party rule in terms of a Western democracy, after 13 years of Labour Party rule and management, and many would argue mismanagement of the Canadian government, now the Canadian Conservative Party is going to have a plurality, and the new prime minister will be Stephen Harper. And there are many people who think that this may well lead to closer relationships between Canada and the United States of America, in particular between the Canadian prime minister and the American president, George W. Bush. But this also affords us the opportunity to remind ourselves of where Canada is, really, in terms of the spectrum of Western democracies. Americans give inadequate attention to our northern neighbor, our biggest trading partner, a key ally. You have the longest non-protected international border anywhere in the world across the northern United States and southern Canada. And it is because we have, for so many decades, indeed now for centuries, enjoyed a friendly relationship with our neighbor to the north. And that is an invaluable gift to this country. And we need to be very, very thankful for that. Just look at other countries that have antagonisms across their borders, and you will recognize how wonderful it is that America and Canada have been allies for so long. But there are also some key distinctions between American and Canadian cultures, and the Canadian culture is much more closely aligned with a European model on social issues, on cultural values, on many of the great moral issues of controversy in our times. You will find that the Canadians are mirroring Western Europeans more than Americans. The Canadian economy is more closely socialistic than is the United States by any stretch of the imagination. You have national health insurance in Canada. You have a much higher tax base in Canada. You have all kinds of different economic realities. You have a different form of federalism between the provinces and the national government. You have something very different, indeed, than the American form of government. But between even the branches of the government there in Canada. But know this, even as there are distinctions between the American and the Canadian cultures, we are united by a language and we are united by a considerable amount of history and heritage. And we are also united by the fact that we need each other. And it's going to be very interesting to see how the new Canadian Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, and President George W. Bush renegotiate something of the political relationship between these two major countries. But if anything, Americans just give inadequate attention to Canada. And this is one reminder that this very crucial election in Canada's history, ending 13 years of Labour Party rule, is something that ought to have the attention of Americans. I guarantee you, if you're a Canadian, you know exactly what's going on in American politics. Just look at the Globe and Mail in Toronto, the Toronto Star, or other major Canadian newspapers, and you will see that they are filled with news about American politics. And so it's to our shame that Canadians are so much more educated about America than Americans are about Canada. Other issues in the news include the fact that the Judiciary Committee in the United States Senate has sent forward the nomination of Samuel L. Alito to be the next Associate Justice of the United States Supreme Court. The vote was entirely according to party lines. It was a 10-8 vote. The Judiciary Committee's movement of this nomination now means that it goes to the floor of the full Senate, where a filibuster is now extremely unlikely. And so it could well be that before this week is out, we will have Samuel Alito sitting on the U.S. Supreme Court. And that is, in my view, tremendously good news. Now, we're learning a lot in this process about exactly how these judicial confirmations, especially at the Supreme Court level, are unfolding in our political process. It ought to tell us something, that this was a party line vote. And there are many who expect that it will be nearly that when the decision comes to the full floor of the Senate. And it'll be very interesting to see if there may be just a few Democratic senators who will vote for Samuel Alito. And we should hope that it's that way, because it isn't healthy for the body politic. It is not healthy for our national political system to have a vote on something like a Supreme Court nomination entirely along party lines. We know there is political conflict in this country. There is moral and cultural and social conflict in this country. But it is not healthy for a vote like this to be entirely along party lines. Because the one thing you know is, if that's the case, it's really not an argument over judicial qualifications. It's really not an argument over someone's education or temperament or ability to serve constructively on the court. It's about politics, and it's about certain hot-button issues. Lest you may have missed that point, just listen to what Senator Dianne Feinstein, the senior senator from California, said in her comments about why she was going to vote against Samuel Alito. This is what she said. If one is pro-choice in this day and age, in this structure, one can't vote for Judge Alito. It is simply that simple. I am very concerned about the impact he would have on women's rights, including a woman's right to make certain reproductive choices, end quote. In other words, Senator Feinstein is being at least awkwardly honest here to make very clear that abortion, Roe v. Wade, is the litmus test for her vote. It is the one issue. It's the one issue she cited as sufficient to determine her vote. Senator Edward Kennedy, Democrat of Massachusetts, said, of Samuel Alito, Judge Alito refuses to enforce core constitutional standards protecting individuals against low-level government officials in routine situations. There's no reason to believe he'll say no to a president who violates individual rights under the cloak of national security. So here, again, you have something that isn't even before the court at this point that arises as an issue for Senator Kennedy. This, of course, is a way of this senator referring to the surveillance, now very controversial, undertaken by the White House in response to 9/11. The surveillance of those who are called by and those who are calling known terrorists on the international scene. It's fascinating to see all this unfold. And if you don't take an interest in this, you're missing something that is vital to the future of our democracy. We're watching how these issues are now coming together in a new constellation, a new political structure. And it's interesting now that in the year 2006, you have the issue of abortion still front and center. 33 years after Roe v. Wade, it is front and center in our national political debate. That ought to tell us something. It has to tell us that the Supreme Court was way out of line with the popular sentiment of the nation. It has to tell us that the Supreme Court in 1973 was way off the scales of anything that the American people were prepared to tolerate. There is no other issue in America's public life that is still debated on the front pages. Just take Senator Feinstein's statement. 33 years after the fact, with the vehemence, with the urgency, and with the intensity of abortion. And that ought to tell us something. One thing it tells me is that with all the moral confusion of our age, there is still a deep commitment, or at least, shall we say, a deep concern for the sanctity of human life on the part of many Americans. They're not ready to buy the whole abortion argument, and they're not ready to buy the absolutely unrestricted access to abortion that is the legacy of Roe v. Wade. And for those of us who care about the sanctity of human life, that at least is a place to begin. United Nations Ambassador John Bolton told the International Assembly that U.S. President George W. Bush will not accept a nuclear Iran. Speaking via a video hookup to the Interdisciplinary Center's conference, he said this: President Bush is determined to pursue the agenda through peaceful and diplomatic means, but listen to these words, he said, but has made clear that a nuclear Iran is not acceptable. Now, here again, you see a dance around a very sensitive issue. Just last week, French President Jacques Chirac said that France's nuclear capability would be used, at least potentially, against any state that would threaten terrorism. But Europe has not been clear about the fact that Iran is simply going to have to be forced to stop its nuclear ambitions. It'll be fascinating to see how this comes about, but what you have here is a clear statement from the United Nations ambassador from the United States of America that a nuclear Iraq isn't going to happen. The University of Florida is in the news having passed domestic partner benefits that was going to require that employees of the university pledge that they're actually involved in a sexual relationship with those they list as domestic partners. It was a first in the nation, and today, just a few hours ago, the university backed down, but it tells us how sick this society becomes when something like sex becomes so central that you have to fill out an affidavit for it just to get insurance benefits. It tells you also what happens when marriage is marginalized and domestic partnerships become the virtual equivalent of marriage. We'll be back to talk about a happy husband, how to be one, or how to get one. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. And this program is about the Christian worldview. It's about engaging contemporary issues with intelligent Christian conversation. It's not about family therapy. It's not about counseling. And so when we take on an issue like husbands and marriage and wives, we're taking it on from the vantage point of what it means as Christians try to think through the way, for instance, a secular psychotherapist would give advice. And that's exactly what we're going to do today. I think we're going to have some fun with this. The book is entitled The Secrets of Happily Married Men. It's on the new book sections of bookstores across the country. The subtitle is 8 Ways to Win Your Wife's Heart Forever. And the author is Scott Haltzman, M.D. He's a psychiatrist. He is assistant professor of psychiatry and human behavior at Brown University and medical director of NRI Community Services in Rhode Island. And he has an engaging writing style, along with his co-author, Teresa Foy DiGeronimo. And it is a fascinating book. The Washington Post gave it some attention even today in an article entitled Making Marriage Like Work. An author says men can succeed by treating it like a job. Well, when you see an article like that, you got to find out about this book. And the more we found out about it, the more I was certain we needed to talk about this. Now, in this particular book, Scott Haltzman, Dr. Haltzman, suggests that marriage is a very good thing for men, and divorce is a very bad thing. Well, we're going to share his conviction on that. He wants to help couples avoid divorce. He wants them to have happy marriages. And, of course, his concern is happiness. Now, again, when we really measure this by the Christian worldview, we have to understand that marriage is an obligation, is a covenant that requires our respect and our faithfulness regardless of our affective state. That is, regardless of whether we feel particularly happy or not. If we just get out of marriage when we're unhappy, then just about every couple's going to find a place to get off at some point. It's not all about happiness. But let's just give Dr. Haltzman his due here when he thinks that divorce ought to be avoided, and he understands that happiness is an important quotient of what marriage is to be about. But this is what he says. He says you have to start out with the understanding that every marriage is going to have conflict, and that when conflict happens in most marriages, couples do almost exactly the wrong thing. What's he talking about? He says they go to counseling. And he makes the amazing argument that I think is absolutely true, folks. Listen to me. He makes the amazing argument that counseling is just disastrous for men. Because of the talk counseling that is the standard fare in marriage counseling. Well, how did you feel about that? Well, tell me, how did this come about? And the guy's not talking because he doesn't have the equipment for it. That's not what he's made for. He gets no thrill out of talking about it. And besides that, it only takes him about 80 words to say it, and he's done. But the talk therapy is made for women. And this guy ought to know. This is his business. He is a psychiatrist. And he says the problem is that men aren't equipped for this. Now we have a little worldview collision going on here, too, because Dr. Haltzman thinks that this is tied to evolution, that men evolved differently. And he goes into some fascinating information here. And when I say fascinating, I mean fascinating. I mean, he goes into the actual construction of the brain and talks about parts of the brain that I didn't even know you could isolate in terms of differences between men and women. And he says, here's the deal. He says men just aren't the parts of the brain that are well equipped in men are doing parts, not talking parts. And he says they're not affective. And so women have this ability to emote and to make emotional connections when men are trying to figure out how they can get the hall pass to go out and play. And he says, this is just disastrous. He says, you get a couple and they're in trouble and they have conflict and you bring them in for this kind of counseling. And what happens in so many cases is she talks and he didn't have a lot to say. Now, interestingly, Dr. Holtzman says the key for a man to make his marriage succeed is to treat it like a job. He says in a job, you have certain assignments and this is what you do. You just do the job. And he says there's an assignment for a husband in marriage, and guys, just do the job. He says if you got to write it down, write it down. You know, give yourself a report card. He says that there are 8 secrets. Number one, make your marriage your job. The idea here is that guys have skills and habits developed at work that they can apply to marriage. He says think of marriage as a job description. Love, honor, and respect your wife. Be sexually and emotionally faithful. Listen without being judgmental. Support her ambitions. Try to understand how she is different emotionally. Always be honest. Keep your promises. Share in child care and domestic work. Be attentive, fun-loving, and as adoring as you were during courtship, and be affectionate. And he goes on and says, this is not a part-time job. Well, I guess not. Did you hear? I mean, as a husband, I have to say, what a job description. Good grief. Now, I'm not arguing with it, sweetheart. I know that it's all true. I mean, it's in the job. But there, it's no wonder that a lot of men just forget some of this on a daily or weekly basis or longer because they don't think of it like a job description. So I'm gonna chalk this up as good advice from Dr. Holtzman. Think of it as a job description. Second thing he says you need to know is your wife. He says you think you know your wife. Most men think they know their wives, but they really aren't paying attention. He says you have to do research. Think of it like a job project. You're doing market research, and she's your market. You got to figure out how she's thinking. And collect data. Observe her in mundane situations where she reveals herself. At the sidelines at a kid's game, when she's with her best friend, at a restaurant or a coffee shop, et cetera, et cetera. Now, he suggests that now the Washington Post has to say at this point, we think he's serious here. He suggests keeping an observational chart. And I have his book before me where on pages 92 and 93, he has, no kidding, a daily observation chart. Now, this is where I think he goes off the tracks, guys. I just do not see any guy I know sitting down with a pen and a chart going, well, she frowned at this moment, and she smiled over here. She was funny at this point. Activity number one, argued on phone with mother about vacation plans. Observation, after she hung up, she was upset and went straight to the refrigerator to eat. What can I do about it? This is column three. Next time I see her picking at the fridge, say, what's up? This is all written down, and I'm with the Washington Post on this one. We think he's serious. Activity, watching TV in bed at night. Observation, she complained that her feet are cold. What can I do about it? Pick up a pair of those heated socks I saw at the boutique, or bring her a hot water bottle. You know what? You could have done that in less time than writing the thing down. But nonetheless, you know, at least he's serious. This is the job description, so do your job. Then he says, be home now. Here's the problem. Guys evolved as prowlers and hunters, not home tenders. But to make a marriage work, you've got to spend a lot of time around the cave. Okay. Here we have our little worldview conflict here. He thinks that the human brain differences between men and women are the products of evolution. And he thinks that human behavior has also developed in an evolutionary pattern. And that's why men are out there. That's why we like to be out and busy and doing something. It's because we're supposed to be remembering those days when our ancestors were out there stalking woolly mammoths and bringing home scavenging food and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I don't believe that. But I do believe he's onto something. I just think he's got the explanation wrong. I think God, for his good reasons, for his glory, made men and women differently. And the differences in the male and female brain are not tied to some evolutionary accident, but rather the fact that God knows what we need. And for his glory, he made men and women different. Now, sure, sin has corrupted us, and those differences are often not what they were supposed to be. But the basic idea that men and women are different, I don't think we need a psychiatrist from Brown to tell us that. But this guy is onto something. And even as a Christian reads this book, we're going to have to correct premise here and premise there. But I think it's very interesting, and we can describe this as an evidence of common grace. I think it's very interesting that the way God made us even comes out when a secular psychiatrist tries to talk about how men can be happy husbands and can take the lead in creating happy marriages. He's got a lot more in this book. There are many more steps, but you know enough of what he's talking about to figure out whether this is making any connection at all. Hunter-gatherers, non-affective types out there, you ready to call? 877-893-8255. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome back. Do you want to be a happy husband? Do you want a happy husband? Well, Scott Halsman wants America's husbands to be happy. And here you have a secular psychiatrist writing a book that I think is probably headed for the bestseller list. It's getting pushed a lot in newspapers, and I think it's just got so much in it that's going to create conversation. I wouldn't be surprised that before long you're hearing a lot about this book. That's why we decided to get ahead of the curve, talk about it today. And I think there are going to be a lot of you who are going to want to talk about this. There is a humorous dimension to this. I can't hide it. I mean, this guy is onto something and the differences between men and women. Now, I'm not sure he's onto as much as he thinks he's onto. I mean, this idea of keeping an observational chart about your wife, I want to meet the guy who actually does that. And yet the other stuff I find just very, very interesting. And for instance, he's got my attention when the second chapter of his book is entitled Beware of Marriage Counseling. Now, those of you who are marriage counselors out there, well, you can have the phone number, too. It's 877-893-8255. But that's not really what we're talking about. Because the point is that you should not ever go to – it's not that you should just avoid marriage counseling altogether. So you should understand what's going on. Listen to this. He has a great statement about this, the problem with men in counseling. He says here, at the top of the list of reasons why marriage counseling can let you down is the fact that too many couples therapists still believe the false premise that men have weak relationship skills. And he goes on and says they don't have weak relationship skills. They're just completely different. They're not centered in being sensitive, empathetic, and expressive like the wives. And I love this. Now all you have to do is either be a guy or no one, and you're going to know how right this is. Listen to what he says. Remember that men tend to be competitive. They may not want to be in therapy, but if they are going to be in therapy, they want to come out a winner. And that's the way, that's it. You know, it's like someone said to me, a woman has said, the problem with my husband is he wants to win every argument. Well, why do you think he got into it? I mean, he got into it to win. And, you know, the whole thing about men and women being different in terms of empathy, now, there may be something to what Dr. Halsman says. He actually goes into the brain. Here's what he says. First of all, the limbic system. Current research has found that females often have a deeper, deep limbic system than males. The male brain possesses few neural pathways, fewer, to and from the emotion centers in the limbic system. Bingo! Reason number one, that females may indeed be more in touch with their feelings than males. But I love the next one. The amygdala, and that's a part of the brain too. You didn't know you had one, but now you do. This section of the brain handles aggression and the emotional connection to events. Interesting studies of the amygdala have found that when men and women are exposed to pictures of sad or frightened people and asked to imagine what they're thinking, their amygdalas light up. But then the researchers note that the men's amygdalas shut down in a few minutes and higher cortical functions light up. Men simply don't hold on to emotional responses very long before searching for a rational response to process the emotion. The female brain lingers longer on the negative feelings. Now, that's really interesting. Because what he goes on in this section is to say that when men get sad or they get emotionally involved, their next question is, okay, what are we going to do about it? And let's go do something about it. We've felt about it long enough now. Let's go do something about it. Meanwhile, sweet, loving, very committed wife is feeling like he's an insensitive lout because she's still in the feeling mode and he's in the doing mode. In the calling mode is Kermit, calling from Bristol, Tennessee, listening on WHCB. Kermit, what do you make of all this?
Well, I think he's onto something. You're right. And that we bought into a lie, the men that want to be good husbands, looking for that way, bought into a lie of trying to get in touch with our feminine side. We were kind of led astray. Now it's time for us to go back and understand we're men as God created us to be. Women bought the lie, and they need to understand we're men the way God created us to be. And we need to be, in response to that, biblically correct and be the men God called us to be. And women need to be the women God called them to be for a marriage to truly work and for it to truly be happy.
Kermit, just a whole lot of wisdom in what you had to say there. You know, all this stuff about men getting in touch with their feminist side and all the rest, I don't think men had any patience for that in the first place because when they look in the mirror, they didn't find one. Does that resonate with your experience?
You know, the intellectual side says, well, maybe there's something to us. Let's explore it. Let's go a little deeper and let's see. Maybe my wife is not all wrong. Maybe I need to be more sensitive. but we're coming to the conclusion that, nah, I've tried that, and it's like, nah, it ain't going to work. It will not be that way. I'm not created that way.
Okay. Well, Kermit, I think a lot of guys out there are going, way to go, Kermit. Now, the question is, how do we love our wives in a way that is authentically male and masculine, and also to the glory of God? The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Does this ring a bell with any of you? Have you been in the counseling sessions and heard some of this? Ladies, have you looked at your husband and wondered what in the world's going on in his amygdala? Well, maybe you didn't know to phrase it that way, but if you want to talk about it, the number is 877-893-8255. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues of the day. We're looking today at Scott Haltzman's book, The Secrets of Happily Married Men. He's a professor of psychiatry at Brown University. This book is really going to skyrocket up the bestseller list, I think. You're seeing a lot of word about it in Publishers Weekly and the book review pages of major newspapers. And I think it's because he's taking on a different tack here. And it's coming just at the intersection of so many other cultural concerns. Newsweek magazine, The Problem with Boys on the front. An entire slew of articles in recent weeks about the fact that boys aren't going on to college. Something's going wrong. And the differences between men and women, boys and girls, are all of a sudden getting the attention of even the secular world. And I think that deserves our attention. Now, I've mentioned how we have some worldview conflicts with much of what Dr. Haltzman has to say. But, you know, we left off in the last segment where he was saying that men just can't empathize the way that women sometimes want them to. They, just by the very construction of their brain, tend to go immediately from empathy to action. What are we going to do about this? I want an action plan. I want to go do something. Whereas the female side is more inclined to continue to feel the affective dimensions, the emotional dimensions. But guys, he doesn't say, therefore, that we should just say to our wives, deal with it. He says there's some specific things you can do to help to connect. And remember, he says that our job is to treat marriage like a job. With a job description, certain specific things you just got to do. That's what you're hired for. That's why she signed on to this thing. Now, for instance, I said he had some very specific things. He says to, when you're talking to your wife, now, you're going to love this. Number one, stand still when she talks. Well, little boys are fidgety and so are big ones, but I mean, that's just the way it works. And the hotter the issue, the harder it is to stand still. But that's a good start. Number two, turn off the TV. Okay? Some men are getting real nervous on that one. But guys, turn off the TV, show her you love her by being serious and intent. And then third, look directly at her. He says many men actually attend better to conversation when they're engaged in action-oriented enterprises such as straightening out a room or cleaning the barrel of a shotgun. It helps to relieve anxiety they feel about having to talk, particularly if they're asked to talk about their emotions. But women don't get it, and they think you're distracted when actually you're able to think better. He says, listen, guys, we know this. We can think better. We can bring words up better. We can be more honest if we're not staring at each other. But women don't know that. They think if you're not staring at each other, you don't really care. So that's your job description. Stare and then come up with the words. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Does this make sense to you? How do we as Christians relate to this kind of advice? I think there's some really good stuff here, and there's some stuff we just can't go along with. Let's go to Tracy, listening on XM170 in Auburn, Alabama. Tracy, your turn.
Yeah, I was just calling. I really related. I had the discussion with my wife this morning. I have a daughter in college, and she has to go to a different part of Chicago that's a little more rowdy, let's say. And my wife is upset about it, and she got upset with me because, right away I wasn't empathizing with her. I just said, well, let's not get upset about it. Let's just figure out what we can do or if it's that bad of an area or exactly what the problem is. And she got quite upset with me because I wouldn't empathize with her and wouldn't go along with her feelings.
All right, Tracy, let's assume that Dr. Haltzman's onto something here, and our job description is to relate, and I'm not making light of this. Is this the kind of situation in which we as husbands have to kind of step back and say, all right, maybe we even need to tell our wives that we are this way? I mean, does that work?
No, because I tried it this morning, and I told her the same thing, and she got, you know, upset with me because it's just, you know, right away their response is, well, your ears are always running, you know, you're not listening to me, you're just, you know, your ears are running on, you know, and it's like, well, they are because I'm trying to figure out how to fix the situation instead of making it worse. And so, yeah, it does get a little out of hand.
An honest man in Auburn, Alabama. Tracy, I appreciate your call. And, you know, I think this is a situation in which Christian husbands need to encourage each other to do our best to help lead our wives in the very concrete way of understanding really who we are and how we think. Because the differences between men and women are huge. And we as Christians understand that that's not an evolutionary accident. And we understand that it's not just the corruption of sin. That God, for his glory, made us complementary to each other. Made the male and made the female differently. Made the male and assigned him certain responsibilities and tasks. And made the woman for the man and gave her certain responsibilities and tasks. And you know, if we did not have to worry about sin, if we were in Eden before the fall, we wouldn't have this problem. All of this would be to the glory of God, and it would be an unblemished reflection of God's perfect purpose. But once sin came in, then these differences between men and women become both exaggerated and the ground for massive misunderstanding. Now, there's another point of Dr. Haltzman's book that I think is really important. And he looks at this from a secular perspective, but I'm going to come back from a Christian perspective and say even more emphatically what he wants us to hear, and that is that marriages can work. I think one of the reasons why this book is noteworthy is because it is not a depressive, negative look at marriage. It's a celebration of marriage. It's an understanding of how much happiness can be found in marriage, and it's an affirmation that if men, and that's what he's concerned about here as husbands, if men will get in the game and understand how we're made, and understand how women perceive us, our wives perceive us, and understand that we have to treat this like a job as seriously as we would a career, then I think a lot of marriages would be different, and I think Christians ought to celebrate the common grace found in that suggestion. We ought to treat marriage as seriously as we treat our job, so that we would no more be satisfied with failure in marriage than we would in failure with our career. And I think that flies against much of the, if not the advice, then the reality of what's out there in the world today. I think there are an awful lot of men who really are in love with their jobs and in love with their hobbies and in love with other aspects of their lives, but they don't show that they're in love with their wives in such a way that their marriage is of such importance to them. And, you know, the longer you're married, the more you realize that, marriage comes in different seasons and phases, too. And I think that's another ground of understanding that is really required of husbands and wives. It's been fun to look at this book. And I've had a good time looking at it because I've had to laugh at some of the pages and chuckle in others. And there are other places where I thought, you know, he's really on to a keen insight. But, you know, if the secular world is this involved in this conversation, and if you have a secular author, a psychiatrist at that, who says beware much of the logic of the marriage counseling movement, I think we as Christians ought to really take a close look at this. We can't buy into the therapeutic worldview. We can't buy into the idea that you can just talk your way out of a problem. We have to understand that marriage is God's gift to us, and we can only find true happiness in marriage by mutual submission to God, and then to God's plan for the marriage, a complementarian plan with different roles for men and women. Be right back. We've been talking about Dr. Scott Haltzman's book, The Secrets of Happily Married Men. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation. It really sparked some very interesting points as we thought about what this secular authority has to say about marriage. Some very new things, I think, when you compare with other books in the field, and how we as Christians have to come at it from a yet very different angle and think through the same things. Where there's common grace, we find a common affirmation of the way God made us, and we find the truth that God has put within the world, shining forth even through some secular sources. But we can't buy the total worldview, and that's certainly true with this book as well. You know, I appreciate much of what he had to say. I think it's certainly true that we need to think, as men, as husbands, of marriage in terms of a job, with this equal seriousness, and think of it as a job description. I think what he talks about in the innate differences between men and women, I think that's also important. And frankly, you need to know that if you're also parenting a girl or a boy. You have to know how they are different as well. And I think his practical suggestions are also very helpful. And I'm going to go home tonight where my wonderful wife is fixing one of my favorite dinners because she loves me. And so I'm going to follow Dr. Haltzman's advice. I'm going to stand still and turn off the TV and look her in the face and tell her how much I appreciate it. Well, folks, there's so much going on in the world, and yet I need to correct one thing we have talked about here. Now, Reuters News Service is reporting that the Vatican is not, after all, considering a rehabilitation of Judas, the betrayer of Christ. According to authoritative sources within the Vatican, this was a story without a firm foundation. Now, what you have here is the Times, one of the nation's, in fact, one of the world's leading newspapers, the Times of London, that reported this along with a direct quotation from one of the central sources in the Vatican. Somebody is going to have to explain how that came about, but at least let's take this as good news that the Vatican is not considering a rehabilitation of Judas. As I said, the very question raises all kinds of distinctions between Roman Catholics and evangelicals on biblical authority and the development of doctrine, but as much as those issues are fascinating, we'll have to wait and see if there's some other movement along these lines coming from the Vatican. But for now, Judas, not rehabilitated. Folks, if you looked at the funny pages of your newspaper today, and I rarely do, but one of my assistants brought me the BC cartoon from this morning, and it's worth mentioning. It shows two ladies sitting on a sandbar. The first says to the other, "What is the purpose of having children?" The second says, "It's the only way to learn how to use the iPod." Well, that's the way an awful lot of parents feel. And when you think about the challenges of technology, it does say a whole lot that we're living in a world of upended authority, where the 13-year-old knows more than his dad about what makes the computer work, and the 16-year-old daughter can find phone numbers in her phone that her dad can't find in his. We're living in a new world. It requires Christians to be nimble of mind, careful of thought, and always taking every thought captive to Christ. We have big issues out there, but we need not fear. I'll be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. This is Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.